We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrandt, that fine gentleman over there in sunny, in springy, in thawing Chicago, Illinois, Dan Rubenstein, sir. How are you today?
I'm good. I sound worse than I feel. Been pumping the lozenges, the cough drops, because that's what happens when you live in a home with a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old, the Petri dish duo. But I'm pretty good. I wore a light jacket for the first time in a long time yesterday at the park. Things are trending in the right direction, Ty. Zero complaints. How are you doing?
I'm all right. We had 5 inches of snow this weekend. But mercifully, it seems as if the weather's going up into the mid-50s and then probably the upper 60s by week's end. So, hence, I did not shovel. I'm going to allow Mother Nature to take care of it on her own.
Got some tea times coming up?
Not quite yet. We got to give the ground a chance to thaw out. But before long, we're going to be diving in full bore into spring here. And that's what this show is about, Dan. This show is about spring questions. Spring forward. We turned the clocks ahead this past weekend. It screwed me up. I'm sure it screwed you up.
A little bit.
So we're going to look forward. We're going to talk about spring questions in college football that need to be answered. We'll get into that and much, much more here on the show. Don't forget, we are driven by our good friends over at Geico. We put out 2 episodes per week. Don't forget to go on out and subscribe or follow. If you can, rate or review. We appreciate it. Verballers.com is where you can get access to this show, all of our shows a little bit early. You can watch this show. You also get access to some of the bonus features that we have out there for all y'all this offseason, not the least of which is Extra Nuggets, Dan, your limited run exclusive series that we are putting out there for our Verballerhood at Verballers.com. How are things going? We've got a new one Wednesday, right?
Correct. New on Wednesday. Excited for people to hear it that are on verballers.com. Encourage everybody who hasn't been to just take a look around, take a glance, see if it's for you. Hopefully it is. New one coming this Wednesday with Adam Amin, of course, co-hosting. And we're actually doing on our Thursday show, Solid Verbal show, it is a Nugget-centric college football episode, is it not?
It's a thematic Nuggets of sorts.
It's a thematic Nugget of sorts on the, not this episode, which is celebrating all things springtime, which is that when you fell in love with your bride, Ty? Was it a springtime love affair?
No, it wasn't.
When did your first date was what time of year?
It was in the summertime.
Yeah, same here. Summertime. Okay, I was hoping for some sort of romantic tie-in, but unfortunately.
No, sorry, not for me.
Okay, fair enough. So excited for that Thursday, very specific, on-brand, timely show we're doing.
March the 17th. You can look into that on the Google machine if ever so inclined to figure out which direction we may be leaning. But in the interim, yeah, we've got spring questions, got a bunch of college football news, actually, they're going to talk about here briefly.
Right.
Before long, though, the latest version of solidgiveaway.com will expire. So go on over to solidgiveaway.com if you want to win the Jonathan Taylor tailback signed mini helmet. You got about 24 hours or so before we draw a winner. There is still time to do that. It's free to enter. You can join the likes of Nick, who won the Reggie Bush signed mini helmet a month ago by just following a few free and easy steps. It's there.
He was awesome this past year for the Colts. Yes?
Yeah. Yeah, I think he had 1,800 yards rushing. He was pretty much the top rusher in the NFL.
So that could be an investment that is appreciating.
Indeed.
Because he's very, very young in his career. Okay, that sounds awesome to me.
Dan, before we do anything more... I'm not going to yell breaking news. It's not really breaking
boop, boop.
News, per se. But we will first start... just in an effort to keep our Verballers up to speed with what's going on out there, mm-hmm. with this story that The Athletic published.
Yeah.
Did I see correctly that there's a kid who might get $8 million in NIL deals? Did I read that correctly?
I hope so. For the sake of the whoever this kid is, which I think that's a very transparent, like if you follow recruiting at all, on like the national scope, it seems... pretty obvious, but who knows? Yeah, it's a big number, and hopefully it's a it's one that comes with as few strings as possible. And that's something we talked about with Matt Brown a few weeks ago. He of was it Extra Points,
Extra
right?
Points,
his
yeah,
terrific newsletter. Matt Brown, it's sure there are going to be collectives. And so this deal, it was, I think Stu Mandel wrote the article for The Athletic with contributions from David Ubben, who used to, I believe, now he's on the National League, but used to cover Tennessee, if that's... And he wrote a long piece about the Tennessee collective
Right. Not
terribly long ago. And there have been some big visitors to Tennessee recently. And presumably a quarterback would be the position group that would demand the highest attention financially from some of these collectives. But anyway, no, it's a fascinating story because, I mean... Anybody who's able to fully monetize their market worth is a good story. And so if this recruit is able to do so with as few a string attached as possible, and some of it was written about in the piece that there was language, at least in an early draft, I believe, of the contract that was reminiscent, according to an NIL attorney, of what you might see in terribly lopsided musician contracts that... retained control over things like future earnings and took away the exclusive NIL rights. And exclusive for anybody who has operated in any sort of artistic space or creative space or anything like that, it's a pretty dangerous word that you better be sure of everything you're getting into, because when things go awry, they can go awry in a very definitive way. And so I know I'm being kind of vague about this, but I, for the sake of all of these athletes that are entering into this territory that are high profile, whether it's softball, football, basketball, whatever, got to lawyer up to protect yourself and get the least amount of dangerous language in there. Even if you're going to make a little bit less, you got to protect yourself. So whoever this recruit is from the collective, Tennessee recently written about. Had a recent big visitor, quarterback. Whoever it might be.
Yeah, who knows who it is, right?
I hope his representation is airtight and he's getting a great deal for himself, and whichever collective this is representing whichever school is doing everything it can to be as athlete forward as possible. How about that?
That was a great song and dance, Dan. Thank you for that. Yeah, $8 million is sort of what I'm still hung up
on. Well, that's ceiling. It's broken up. He's got to be around. He's got to probably meet certain benchmarks in terms of games played and obligations, you know, on social media and promotional type appearances. But even if it's only the ceiling and he only makes $4.2 million, but he is also a successful quarterback for a major program, pretty good.
Yeah, seems like a bit of a risk. However, if there is language in there to protect, I guess, the sponsor in this case, Like, there would almost have to be. You can't pay somebody sight unseen, especially a an unnamed recruit.
Right.
You know, you need to have something to go on. So we'll see where this goes. We'll see if there's more written about this, and we will definitely see if this has any greater impact on other NIL deals, excuse me, moving forward. Yeah. But $8 million is a big number. That's a big chunk of change.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where we're so early in this universe that the term industry standard means nothing.
Means absolutely
nothing.
Right? That,
like, we've entered into deals, and we have representation, and we've talked to entities. And one of the things that we, and this is on a smaller level, we are not making $8 million, at least not yet.
Not yet.
Is that true? Can you confirm?
I will check the books, but I believe that is accurate.
It's, you want to know what industry standard protocol is. And this industry does not have a standard. And so it's all wait and see. And certain deals like this, should they come to fruition, and should this recruit sign with this school, which is the presumed case at this moment, that it's going to be an instance of this will help to set the market in whatever way. And it'll be a fascinating storyline to follow, because, man, this is cash, Ty. This is
straight cash, homie. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. The other news that has been bouncing around, I guess we could address it quickly. There's not a whole lot here from a football standpoint, but there was news that dropped about a week ago that LSU had received notice of allegations tied mainly to the men's basketball program.
Right.
There were some tie-ins with the football program that maybe we can talk about, but Will Wade, the coach, the basketball coach at LSU, subsequently fired for his involvement in this. It seems like he was pretty active in the infraction world as it relates to LSU and what went on there. But he's been relieved of duties. I believe LSU is going to be playing in the NCAA men's basketball tournament, which is going to be a weird dynamic. We won't cover that here. There were some tentacles of this that extended into the football space, Dan. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, this is there were stories before about a booster who was found guilty of felony wire fraud, and he was involved with alleged payments to former offensive lineman Vidal Alexander. And then we have Odell Beckham Jr. being a part of in the investigation with regard to him paying players on the field after LSU won the national championship game a few years ago now. And so it is a notice of allegations. Will Wade, the basketball coach, is gone. Yeah, LSU in sort of precarious waters. I don't know if you saw the Frank Wilson thing as well. Frank Wilson hired back by Brian Kelly. He was a running backs coach for LSU, was hired to be a head coach, I think UTSA, maybe McNeese thereafter. Brian Kelly hires him back, but he is now a part of an allegation by a former associate athletic director regarding sexual harassment. And so it's just, there's a lot of smoke, some of it necessary. Actually, I don't even know. Yeah, some of it necessary and some of it unnecessary around LSU right now. And man, I don't know. There's a lot immediately now on the plate of Brian Kelly and the administration at LSU. And there was, I saw somewhere that it was not an unknown story and situation regarding Frank Wilson, and Brian Kelly hired him back, I would assume, knowingly and having vetted him and having, you know, the administration sign off on everything, obviously. But okay, there is a story brewing at LSU.
The only other tidbit here that I will impart on the Verballerhood is that Nebraska took a survey, which I found interesting.
Okay.
Asking the fan base about alcohol sales and whether or not they'd be cool with gambling at Memorial Stadium. This is a survey of more than 20,000 Nebraska fans. Nearly three quarters of them are cool with alcohol. And more than half would be okay with sports wagering on site. Now, I don't know where this goes. The alcohol thing, that horse is out of the barn. More than half the schools in the Big Ten, and we've got many more schools around college football that already do the alcohol thing on campus. That's just a trend that's going to continue.
All right.
But the gambling thing on site, the gambling thing and the song and dance that it's got going on with college football is going to be more interesting to follow. We talked a little bit about it on the show, the Q&A show that we did last week, and just how it seems as if there's kind of almost a movement towards gambling in college football with a little bit more partnership. There was news last week. I think it was the MAC agreed to sign over some of its analytics to gambling partners to, you know, greater inform the gambling community as to what's going on in that conference. Like, there's all sorts of weird tie-ins that I think you're going to see blossom up over the next 10 years or so. I just think it's inevitable. But it was interesting at least to take the pulse of Cornhusker Nation and see where folks were at. Still about a 50-50 proposition, but my sense is the longer we go, the more comfortable folks will get with it. And what comes out of that partnership will be interesting. But just keeping people aware of where things stand out.
Sure. Not yet legal in Nebraska, in the state of Nebraska. I think it's pending. There are some hurdles to get over. But I think it was approved last fall in an amendment vote.
Voters in the fall legalized casino gambling, which includes sports wagering, but only at 6 sites within the state of Nebraska.
And not mobile.
Correct.
And not mobile. And I don't know what the status is in Illinois, but I know you have to go to, or at one point you had to go to a casino to prove, like a human CAPTCHA code, like, yes, I am a human, in order to use a mobile app or something to do that. I don't know if that's going to be the case in Nebraska, but okay. I don't know. Not my thing. I just like watching football for football. I use it as a nice device to talk about games. But hey, if you're into it, this seems like it could be a pretty major win if you like going to Husker games and throwing a few shekels on some sports.
The thing that cracked me up on the alcohol side, asked whether they would attend more games if there were alcohol sales, 22% said that they would.
Okay.
And 65% said it wouldn't make a difference. So.
Okay, the last time you went to a college football game, did you drink at the game?
No.
Yeah, I've only drunk at college football games at tailgates. I don't want to waste time waiting in line, and I haven't used the sunscreen bottle, which is genius, the absolute genius, the secret sunscreen flask. Mm. But no, I get nice and warm and fuzzy in the parking lot beforehand, and it kind of lasts me.
All right. Well, that's all we have for news.
Yeah.
Why don't we dive in? Spring is around the corner, Dan.
I'm ready.
Imbibe.
Oh, no.
Imbibe that feeling of spring.
I do. How are you with, you have allergies? You have hay stuff?
I do. Oh, my gosh. Not as bad as my wife. I'm okay with it. I'm not as bad as my wife. My wife is...
Okay.
She goes through it every year, a couple times a
year. Sorry to hear it.
Okay. I'm all right. Do you have allergies?
No, I'm pretty good. I don't have the Flonase ready to roll.
No,
I'm good.
Not a sponsor. Could be.
Could be.
It is springtime, Dan.
Solid Verbal presented by Flonase.
It is.
It's great. File it away. File it away.
Right. It is springtime. Spring games are very much on the horizon. The big dates as it relates to major Power 5 spring games are really throughout the first couple weeks of April. There's a lot of activity on April the 9th, April 16th, April 23rd. Going out to FBS schedules, they do a good job compiling when all the spring games are. But those are the three big dates as it relates to college football spring games in the Power 5.
Mm-hmm.
Every year around this time, you start seeing articles pop up around, what are the big five spring questions for X?
Of course.
And we thought we'd compile some of those. We thought we'd add some of our own. So we've got a list of questions here on our shared Google Doc, not just with respect to teams. Like, I got all sorts of questions about Notre Dame, about Penn State, about Oregon, Ohio, like all of these big Power 5 programs that I think have a ton of interest as we go into the spring, like just new questions in some cases that we're not accustomed to asking about these programs. We could talk about those. We can also talk about some of the broader stuff, you know,
right?
The broader questions. Who needs to lay a better foundation? Who has something to prove as we go into this season? So a lot is out there as we get into this month of the latter half of March, the early part of April, all throughout the month of April. Because this is really the start of the next season. This is when it all begins. And, you know, hopefully there aren't any injuries. Hopefully there aren't any aren't any negative things that come as a result of spring for your team. But in earnest, this is kind of when it starts.
Yeah, and I think many people, ourselves included, are pretty quick to place probably too much importance on spring practice when a lot of it is getting a feel for transfers, getting a feel for freshmen, getting a feel for new coaches, and just sort of regrouping after winter workouts rather than this is going to set the tone for the season. Now, it is advantageous for guys to show up early and get those reps and get used to becoming a college student and, you know, juggling practice and film sessions and stuff like that and workouts and classes and everything that comes with the territory. But also at the same time, very few quarterback battles are going to be decided right now. I think it can be there can be ideas that are formed like, ooh, now this is sort of looking like one, this guy, two, this guy, three, this guy. And that's how we're going to go into summer workouts and fall camp. But I don't think a lot of major decisions are generally made. Now, the big thing to me is how the depth chart starts to take shape ahead of the summer, because this is essentially the third wave of the transfer season. First
right.
being in season
right.
when guys are displeased with their school. The second one being postseason and, you know, when the coaching carousel really starts spinning. And now it's clear that I am, you know, fourth on the depth chart at outside linebacker. I need to figure out a new destination that will get me on the field, presumably quicker. And so it's who prevents from becoming a story in the spring? Who does not suffer a non-contact injury? Who does not decide that they don't like this new coach after spending, you know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks with them? And you know what? I want to transfer closer to home. That's the big deal is, I mean, you essentially, as a fan of any program, want as little news as possible with the lone exemption of, oh my God, this young guy is popping and will be ready a lot sooner than we originally thought. That's kind of best case scenario around the sport. Because otherwise, like, this is just a random example. Like, what is going to come from Nebraska and Mark Whipple and Casey Thompson and
right.
Chuba Purdy? Like, there's not going to be anything definitive. We don't think we're all just, you know, it's a first date. We're all feeling each other out and we're all getting a sense for each other. Do we want kids? How do we feel about...
Do you do that on the first date?
No, I'm saying
that seems a little deep for the first date.
That's what
Dan.
You're not doing, is what
okay.
I'm saying. So, yeah, you're just sort of getting a sense for each other. Who's shown up overweight, underweight? And it's just checking off as few negative boxes and as few positive boxes as possible. Like the Mizzou starting quarterback job probably won't be decided in the next few weeks.
No.
But
no,
we'll see.
And to that point, you know, you brought up Mark Whipple in Nebraska.
Yeah.
I jotted that down as a question, right?
Sure. Of course.
Nebraska is redoing its entire offense.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just Mark Whipple. It's a new offensive staff. Oftentimes, first off, when you got a new guy on campus, not just one guy, a bunch of guys on campus, you also got a new quarterback, two new
yep.
quarterbacks, right? On campus. Mm-hmm. Like, oftentimes when that is the case, you go into a spring game, spring practices, things like that. It is super vanilla.
Mm-hmm.
It is super vanilla. And to your point, you just don't have enough information to figure out what the answers are. We can ask the questions.
Right.
The questions are probably going to be the same come August.
Mm-hmm.
But at least we start to see a little bit more data that hopefully we can use to try and suss this out in advance, right? I mean,
yeah,
it's complicated. The transfer thing is also really interesting to me.
For sure.
Because the note that we jotted down here, the document, I think is the right one. It's not just who's going to transfer, it's where do they come from,
mm-hmm.
right? We could sit here and we could talk all we want about crowded depth charts and post-spring game, who's frustrated, who wants to play right away. In all likelihood, they will come from unexpected places. We could sit here and say on the surface that LSU's got a really crowded quarterback room. And Brian
sure.
Kelly does not necessarily have a great track record for identifying who his guy is and sticking with him. At least we didn't see that at Notre Dame. Maybe that'll be different now. Who knows?
Right.
So what's to say that it's going to be a Miles Brennan or probably not Jaden Daniels at this point if he decides to redo his transfer.
Right.
But like that might be an obvious place to look for where mm-hmm. the transfers might come from. In all reality, it'll probably be places that we don't expect.
Sure. No. And it's also an exceptional time for recruits to visit schools that have new coaches to see, you know, an LSU coach or an LSU recruit, for example, to see Brian Kelly, an Oregon recruit to see Dan Lanning, a Florida recruit to see Billy Napier in action to say like, okay, I have no idea what you're going to look like on offense, what you're going to look like on defense, how all of these coaches are going to mesh, how players respond in practice, what practices are like. And now recruits are able to go to campus and say, okay, I have a sense for a Brian Kelly LSU program. I have a sense for a Marcus Freeman Notre Dame program. I have a sense for a Dan Lanning Oregon program. And so it's the little pieces, you're filling in a lot of blanks around the program that like, and yes, there are programs like last year, like, oh, Bryce Young is definitely the starting quarterback at Alabama. We know this. We saw him in spring. We watched the spring and I'm like, yeah, they don't have another guy who can do this. And it was meaningful. He sort of put what we believed into practice. But otherwise, yeah, I think it's sort of a margin thing and, you know, you're crossing your fingers for what you won't hear.
All right. Let's dive in. Dan yes. Rubenstein.
I just found that one. I don't know what we used.
I like how we just spent like 11 minutes saying it's not that serious. And they're like, Dan Rubenstein, serious sound.
Give me a spring question that you've got. Give me a specific spring question that you've got.
It's all of the new combinations of offensive coordinator and quarterbacks across the sport.
Okay,
and
so this is a big question. It's a broad question.
This is a more broad question, but it's true for, you know, we brought up Nebraska. You can look at where Adrian Martinez, who is now, I think, his offensive coordinator, if you're ready to feel real old, Colin Klein, new offensive coordinator at Kansas State.
Wow.
And because we have the number of transfers across the sport, and the amount of coach movement across the sport, you're like, I mean, I can Bo Nix and Kenny Dillingham and Oregon, like you have like the triple play here with a new head coach, offensive coordinator, and quarterback. So, I suppose my biggest question is a selfish one because Oregon brings in a defensive coach who has had a ton of defensive success. They bring in a new coordinator who has never, I think, been a full-time play caller in Kenny Dillingham. You know, it goes back with Mike Norvell, Memphis, Florida State, and spent some time at Auburn with Gus Malzahn. And Bo Nix, who has that history with Kenny Dillingham, and I don't think it's the biggest question in college football in the spring, but to me, they are a poster child for, I have no idea what they're trying to do, what they'll look like, how quickly they'll play on offense. And that to me is at least something that can begin to be answered this spring. Are there any other schools, I mentioned Kansas State, where you have like a Pitt situation where you're replacing what's now an excellent quarterback in Kenny Pickett and Mark Whipple at offensive coordinator and Brendan Marion, who was a big part of that offense at receivers coach. Like, who are the schools that have those like two or three person combos that are fascinating to you? Wow. I guess I'm turning the question back to you, but Oregon is that prime example to me. LSU is another big one for me. I suppose Notre Dame, I suppose Michigan could have a new full-time starting quarterback. They'll definitely have a new full-time offensive coordinator.
Yeah, I mean, I think Oregon is probably where I go first with it, Dan.
Yeah.
You know, just because there's so much in motion there. Mm-hmm. The Bo Nix to Oregon thing was always confounding to me.
Mm-hmm.
It was always confounding to me. And so what that looks like new coach, other quarterbacks on the roster who could probably play, system, like that to me, I'm always really interested in the situations that on the surface don't feel like they make a whole lot of sense.
Right.
And that one to me, you could say I'm stupid. You could say maybe I didn't do the research, whatever. I don't care. I never understood the Bo Nix move to Oregon. Just feels like an odd fit to me. So that one, I think for sure, is probably the one that stands out.
Yeah, I totally get that. And if you look across the sport, a lot of these situations, you at least have a sense, right? You've seen a Mark Whipple offense. I don't know why we keep hammering, you know, Pitt and Nebraska. Like, you've seen what he's able to do as a full-time play caller. You've seen a quarterback within a system. You've seen, like, you know what a Tommy Rees offense, you know what a Mike Denbrock, Brian Kelly offense is going to look like. You have a sense, but there are certain places where, like even the Clemson situation, like, you kind of
Don't steal my thunder.
Sorry.
I'm going to go there.
I'm just talking about schematically. Like, I don't imagine there's going to be a lot of changes there, but I don't know. They were internal hires, so at least you have a sense for that. But there are certain schools, like, what's going to happen at Auburn, right? If you go back, and am I stealing all of your thunder? Is that what I'm doing?
No. It's fine. No, we're very like-minded here because as you're saying this, I'm thinking, man, this is Auburn.
Right. You're thinking about, okay, yeah. So at least Zach Calzada has the experience within that specific conference. Eric Kiso, the new offensive coordinator for Auburn, has had experience on a number of interesting offensive staffs. And we know what Brian Harsin's offensive background looks like. But when you have those defensive-minded coaches, like, does Marcus Freeman have a new vision for the Notre Dame offense? Presumably no, with how much they're paying Tommy Rees. But, like, this is his time. This is his program. I love seeing the tweaks and shifts and changes as new guys come into power.
Okay. Let me ask my question.
Please.
I won't play that every time. It's a little too dramatic.
Okay. But
you mentioned Clemson. My question is, I think, a little bit more specific to Clemson. And that is DJU actually safe as Clemson quarterback? Is he safe?
Yeah.
I would assume I think so. I would assume so. But everybody's really high on Cade Klubnik, who is now on campus.
Sure.
And I have seen in multiple places, reporters commit the sin, if you want to call it that, steer into the trope, if you want to call it that, of saying that he can really spin it. And let me tell you something, son, when guys who can really spin it are on the roster, generally, they don't sit.
Right.
So DJU is in an interesting spot. He did get better as the season wore on. He did get better. Right. Early on, his footwork was terrible. He was terrible. Yeah. He looked awful. That did improve. Clemson also was in the situation last year where they had a ton of injuries, and that didn't help. Just didn't help. But even still, he only completed 55% of his passes. He had more interceptions than touchdowns. And this is a Clemson offense that was a shell of its former self, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And if you pay attention to and watch the Clemson games and the conversation that Clemson fans, smart Clemson fans have, and analysts who have really, you know, jumped into the Clemson film, it's sort of an across-the-board thing. Like, the receiver play wasn't on the level of where it had been the previous decade at Clemson. The offensive line play had been pretty disappointing. The play calling had become pretty predictable.
Just a lot of
stale.
Stuff. A lot of stuff at the same time, and it's not fair to pin it all on DJU.
Or all on Tony Elliott, yeah.
Or Tony Elliott, or really anybody, right? But Big Cinco is the biggest presence in that huddle, and when he struggles, he's going to shoulder a lot of the blame. So now, as we move forward into 2022, look at the situation. The situation is Clemson's got basically an entirely new coaching staff. Tony Elliott, Virginia.
Yeah.
Brent Venables, notably on the defensive side of the ball, but he goes over to Oklahoma.
And they've had other guys, athletic director, position guys leave. Yeah. Yeah.
So just like a lot of stuff is going down at Clemson. And it does beg the question of, to what end is anybody safe? To what end is Clemson, as we know it, going to be a thing? Now, I'm not going to take the alarmist point of view here and say that Clemson's going down the tubes. That is not what I am saying. But I think it is premature to assume much of anything with Clemson. Clemson's going to have a ton of talent. But DJU, with some of his early struggles, I think it's at least worth asking. Maybe not in spring, maybe not for week six. But the deeper we get into this thing, we've seen Dabo do it before, where he decides to pull a quarterback change and it works out. But I'm just really curious to see how that situation materializes, if there is any kind of low-key competition there.
Yeah, and they lost some key guys to transfer and don't bring in guys to patch holes. So they're not bringing in experienced guys from other places that can immediately balance out a defensive line room or a receiver's room based on the fact that they're 20, 22 and mature and, you know, an interesting leader. Like, Clemson's going to battle with the guys that they've recruited out of high school, and I guess Hunter Johnson, who left and came back, so whatever that's worth. So yeah, unless, to me, your broader and your main point, Cade, you said it's Klubnik. I haven't learned my pronunciations yet. If he is uncommonly mature in the way that Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence were, then sure, I could see DJU getting pushed. But if you are having the down year, the Cheez-It-ish year that Clemson had last year, and then you turn to a true freshman, you better be positive that his upside is enough to mask the deficiencies that haven't yet been fixed. And I don't see it. I don't see it for basically any true freshman quarterback. I think it's a huge exception to the rule rather than any sort of reasonable expectation.
I completely agree. And look, DJU,
they're children.
DJU proved himself to be very durable last season in a year where he had to be.
Yeah.
Because you'll recall that quarterback depth was just not there outside of him. It was slow going. Mm-hmm. So I don't honestly believe that, but it's a question for me because he did struggle so much last year. Let me turn the page a little bit. Let's go to a different program.
By the way, this is true of all programs. Quarterbacks improve.
Quarterbacks get improve. Better. And you know what else is true in most programs this year?
Yeah.
Last year, remember what the narrative was going into the season? One of the reasons we were so interested? It was because there were a lot of new quarterbacks in big spots.
Yes.
This year, we don't have that. This coming season,
no.
The quarterback position at most Power 5 places is sort of already decided.
Sure.
So well, it's a different circumstance in 2022.
Yeah, it's not the heavy hitters that we had last year, but I still think there are interesting new faces at quarterback or new full-time faces at quarterback. But yeah, it last year almost seems like it was probably an aberration. The other fascinating thing to me with quarterback is in this era of transfers, especially at quarterback, right, that you're going to go to a place for a couple years, see if you can win out, and you go into places now as a top-flight quarterback thinking, if I win the battle, I'll play. Two, three years, whatever. And if I don't, I'm leaving. Like, that's the mindset right now. And so the fascinating thing is all of these schools know that too, obviously. And so they are bringing in, you know, the top of the top, five-star after five-star in consecutive classes, four-star after four-star in consecutive classes. So the minute these guys find out that they're number three on the depth chart, that's that second or third wave, excuse me, of transfers. And so that to me is, like, and I use the Mizzou example, like, you're only the next hot thing for a year. And then there's a new next hot thing. And so Mizzou is an example of that. We've seen it all over the sport. Like, Texas right now is likely going to start Quinn Ewers, yes?
Yeah.
That's our guess. Has not run a full spring practice, fall camp, or anything for Texas. Hudson Card was that next hot thing. And who's Texas recruiting right now to be their quarterback starting next year, presumably? Arch Manning, right? That there is going, even at the top, you are only the next hot thing for precisely a year. And then you're just a name on a list.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
One of those programs that I think does have some quarterback questions, probably not as burning a variety of question as some other places, but Texas A&M.
I think there's amazing questions all over for A&M. Continue.
A&M is very, very interesting to me, not necessarily because of the quarterback position, right? So the quarterback situation is Haynes Kigg was hurt. He was a redshirt freshman. He was hurt last year. That's when we saw Zach Calzada step up and, you know, perform okay, beat Alabama, which is a pretty big deal if you're an A&M fan.
Of course.
But Haynes King's going to be back. They also bring in Max Johnson, who transfers over from LSU. And I think the assumption is that he will probably be the guy, but also there's Connor Wegman, who was their big-time freshman recruit. That will be interesting to see how Jimbo handles that situation. Again, the assumption is that it's going to be Max Johnson, but who knows?
Right.
What I'm actually more curious about is what they do and if we can glean anything into their passing game, specifically explosive plays, because that's been an area where A&M's really struggled the last couple of years. They need to find a way to go downfield a little bit more. I am infinitely curious if Evan Stewart, their top prospect, can do anything. If he can help them blow the lid off the top of opposing defenses. He's a guy that when recruited, and you know, everybody does kind of the player comps thing, he was compared to Devontae Smith. A&M with a quarterback who can throw it deep and even a 80% version of Devontae Smith. A&M becomes far more formidable as an offense. They just have not had that. And so I don't know if that's something we're going to see in the springtime. I don't know if we'll find out anything more about that when we watch a spring game. But maybe in spring reports, somebody will write about it. I don't know. But that, for me, that's the big question. It's not so much the quarterback thing. It's what will the infusion of a guy like an Evan Stewart do for that offense? Is it something that Jimbo can capitalize on?
Yeah, it's, I mean, that's been the story at least the last two off seasons as well.
Exactly.
Where is the game-changing receiver? Like, we love Anaya Smith. I think his value is in versatility. He can run a bunch of different routes. You can line him up in the backfield. You can use him on
running back. He's a converted running back.
Correct. And so he's a Swiss Army knife. He's everything you want out of an all-purpose type player. But, and by the way, you say, you know, can Texas A&M find that quarterback to throw it downfield to a game-breaking receiver? I think with Max Johnson, it's more loft. Loft it downfield.
More timing, right? Hopefully there's a good tailwind.
Yes. Hoping for the elements giving him a bit of a boost. No, I don't know. It's a fair question. And the question to me is more, how much closer does Texas A&M get on defense because of what they recruited in the secondary, and they have a relatively experienced secondary, what they recruited on defense, you look at, I think it's Harold Perkins. He's probably going to be Harry Perkins. Let's be honest. That's probably, if he's a star, it's probably what we're going to roll with. You look at Walter Nolan. Like, it's, what do they do in order to close the gap from becoming a team with a good defense to a team with a great defense that comes at teams in waves, that's able to keep cycling guys in the way that George was able to do last year? You put together the number one recruiting class of all time, then you start talking about, you know, stacking classes and guys who are just playing 35 snaps a game instead of 55 snaps a game. You got fresh legs all over the place. You got just a crushing defense that, despite only having Max Johnson, despite not having a clear game-breaking receiver or an offensive line that was a little bit too leaky last year, that your defense is good enough baseline to win 10 games. That, to me, is the fascinating thing, to get A&M out of that sort of eight-win treadmill.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
No, I'm with you. I'm interested, though. I mean, Evan Stewart's a guy that I followed a little bit through recruiting and out of Texas, you know.
Opted out of his senior year in high school, I believe.
Yep. So an interesting prospect, to say the least. And if he can provide them with that kind of game-breaking ability, that'd be something that A&M is desperately needed. But like you said, we've seen this one before. All right, your turn. What's your question?
My question, I think, revolves around, this is another one of my like multiple teams fit into this box, is I love the term half teams. I love the term where, you know, your classic half team examples were like Texas A&M under Cliff Kingsbury, where they're, you know, putting out the number 5 offense in the country and the number 125 defense. I tend to use points per drive because, it adjusts for situation, and explosive plays are a positive in that. So I love seeing who can close the gap between their own offense and own defense. And I've got a list of teams here that it would just be wonderful, Ty. And I don't know if you want to look at teams that, you know, really struggled on defense and how you correct that, or really struggled on offense and how you correct that. A number of these teams, like Illinois, added UTSA's offensive coordinator. They had a full-on decent, if not pretty good, defense. And you can talk about the Big Ten West just in general in this space, with what Wisconsin wasn't able to do on offense, with what Iowa was not able to do on offense, with what Minnesota at times was not able to do on offense. But all three of those programs, 4 if you include Iowa, 5 if you look to the other side and include Penn State, are programs that were fully lost on offense for large swaths of 2021. So if it's bringing in a new quarterback transfer, if it's bringing in a new offensive coordinator, if it's getting a lot healthier and have expectations reset to having at least a decent offense, this is the time in spring, especially with new coaching hires and new quarterback transfers in, like Illinois, as we all wanted to talk about Illinois today.
Of course, always.
That to me is pretty fascinating, right? It's the quest for competence that begins in the spring. Is there any reason San Diego State, located where it is, playing against the programs that it plays, shouldn't at least have a top 65 offense? There's no reason that should be the case. Like, you should be able to find kids in Southern California, Northern California, the West Coast, whatever. San Diego State needs to stop with this nonsense of fielding incredible defenses and complete jokes of offenses. That to me is fascinating, and hopefully it's something that's addressed in the spring. The other programs, by the way, we mentioned Texas A&M needs a boost on offense, especially downfield. Toledo, NC State. The offense was behind its defense pretty clearly. Boise State, year one of Andy Avalos. Penn State, we mentioned. I'm sure you have Penn State thoughts. Oh, Nebraska, man. We've talked about. Southern Miss. But like Penn State specifically, here's my question. And you'll get into it. And this is probably an easy transition for you. They finished with the number 98 points per drive offense last year. First year offensive coordinator, relatively experienced starting quarterback, offensive line that was sort of decent at protecting the quarterback, but not really opening up lanes all the time for its at least decent running backs. Had a couple of pretty interesting receivers, and yet couldn't crack an average offensive season. That to me is fascinating. That like, what's going to change?
Well,
in State College, like, what if you're going to start Sean Clifford once again, which is probably the case. They bring in, a top flight running back? I don't know if he enrolled early. It probably doesn't matter at running back. Don't they bring in the number one running back in the country?
Nicholas Singleton.
So how does Penn State, and this is a question for fall camp, it's a question for the season itself, but like this spring, like are we changing something around? What are we doing here?
See, Penn State for me, and maybe I'm biased.
Yeah.
It's the program that has among the most interesting questions as we go into spring.
Sure.
Really, as we go into fall, too. Again, keeping with the theme, many of these questions are going to remain constant.
Oh, yeah. But it's just a foundation thing. Yeah.
Right. So Penn State last year was an interesting spot because they were almost entirely dependent on Sean Clifford, at least on offense. The whole thing ran through Clifford. And we saw in that Iowa game, Penn State was going along just fine until he got hurt. And from that point forward, it was sort of a nosedive on offense. The whole thing imploded on itself. That being said, they never could really run the ball. If you go back to 2020 and look at how inept they were at running the football, something like 3.5 yards per carry. Last year, it got a little bit better, but still not where it needed to be. This was an offense that, by and large, ran through Clifford. When he got hurt, it went downhill. It does kind of tie back into the offensive line. And there have been issues at that Penn State offensive line spot for years now, on end. Hopefully they can resolve that. So I think first we got to look inward at the trenches and see what Penn State does on the offensive line. If they could settle that situation a little bit in the springtime, maybe we'll get some clarity there. But now projecting forward into 2022, it gets real interesting. Singleton's a guy who was incredibly productive coming out of high school. Something like 12 and a half yards per carry. He was very productive. So presumably, he's a guy who is ready for college. He can step in right now and he can get the job done, provided he's got the support up front. I think he can give them a boost. I've said that about other Penn State running backs before. Perhaps I'll be proven wrong again, but I feel pretty confident that Nicholas Singleton, I'm not going to get used to calling him Nicholas. I'm going to want to say Nick the whole time, but Nicholas Singleton, as of now, I think he can give him a boost at running back if he's got the support up front. The quarterback thing to me is probably going to be my biggest source of frustration because I am not now, nor ever have I been, a Clifford guy.
Right.
I'm just not. I'm not into Sean Clifford. I never thought he was all that good. I know he's confident. If you watch any broadcast, the first thing they say about Sean Clifford is that he's confident.
Okay.
Great. I'm not. Yeah. I'm just not. So Clifford, I think, is going to be the guy. It is year two under the Mike Yurcich offense. Perhaps if he's healthy, perhaps if they can build up the support around him, that it will yield better results.
Right.
I remain skeptical that he's the guy, that he can stay healthy, and that they can take that quantum leap forward. I would love to see what their all-world everything, number one quarterback, Drew Aller, however you say the damn kid's name.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see what he can do in this offense from day one, but I don't think we will. I don't think we will. He has enrolled early. Perhaps we'll see some of his talents when Penn State plays its spring game on April the 23rd. That doesn't even touch, by the way, on the defense, which I know this question isn't about defense as much, but Brent Pry left, new head football coach at Virginia Tech. So new blood running the defense, a bunch of guys going pro, doing well at the combine. Returning production defensively is going to be something that James Franklin has to try and figure out. So Penn State, I think, in a bit of a tumultuous state here, not necessarily in a negative way, but there's a lot of turnover there and there are a lot of questions, more questions at Penn State going into this coming season than a bunch of other programs. And that, if nothing more, even if you're not a Penn Stater like I am, if nothing more, that is at least interesting.
I'm fascinated by situations in which quarterbacks fully ascended during last season to being, because we've talked about like quarterback questions, difficulties, whatever. Quarterbacks last year who ascended to being, you know, capital T, capital G, the guy, and what that ceiling that we now have to adjust. Like, we have to adjust what Bryce Young's ceiling is. I have no concept. He wins the Heisman Trophy as a first-year starter at Alabama without, like, the crazy go-to receiver outside. Well, no, he had Jameson Williams, but without having that, the receiving core with, you know, doesn't have Najee Harris. The running back room is really good, but not that crazy strong. So, like, what does Bryce Young look like with a full offseason after being the guy?
Yeah.
Like, what is his ceiling? What is CJ Stroud's ceiling?
Oh,
and then, like, the guys who there was, see, like, there wasn't that much uncertainty about CJ Stroud and Bryce Young going into last year. Like, it was presumed that they were going to be successful. But, like, someone like KJ Jefferson, who answered basically every question, I guess speaking of Penn State, their bowl opponent, like, KJ Jefferson now enters into this season as, when was the last time Arkansas and Arkansas fans were this happy and satisfied and confident in the quarterback position and offense, you know, bringing back Kendall Briles after he, you know, had conversation with Miami, whatever. Like, what is a KJ Jefferson fully realized? Now, no Treylon Burks, but in comes Jaden Hazelwood. Like, what does that look like? What type of player is he? And this is spring and fall, but it starts right now when he has every reason to believe in himself as a Heisman caliber quarterback. Hell, yeah. Tyler Van Dyne, like, doesn't take over that job until midway through the season and is the revelation. God, I'm English and myself are not walking hand in hand today. But like, Tyler Van Dyne, new coaching staff, new coordinator, you know, has, you know, loses, I think it's Harley and Rambo are both gone. Jalen Knighton led the team in carries last year, but he's, you know, he's the full-time guy now. Like, in a new offense, but there's no quarterback competition in Coral Gables. Like, this is the guy. This is the guy right now in the ACC. Does anybody have higher expectations and then a higher presumed ceiling than Tyler Van Dyne right now?
Like, I don't think so.
We can have a Brandon Armstrong conversation, who's looks to be really strong once again, but new coach, new coordinator. Like, it's going to be fascinating with these guys. Once they have that, now that they have the confidence to know what they're capable of, man, I don't know. It's going to be wild to see. I can't wait.
Yeah, having that sort of off season to affirm, confirm, reaffirm that you're the man.
Sure.
That'll be an interesting thing to follow as we get into spring. You know, kind of on a similar note, mm-hmm. we mentioned transfers before, but I think the transfer situation that I am most interested in is Ole Miss.
Yeah.
Lane Kiffin very notably went out and worked the portal pretty hard. The two sure. big signings for him were Jackson Dart, who came over from USC. It was a logical move for Jackson Dart. I'm glad he went there. You'll mm-hmm. recall the pie. I was screaming on the podcast. Go to Ole Miss. Yeah. It's too simple. Go to Ole Miss. They also got Zach Evans. Zach Evans, who didn't really materialize as the five-star back that many thought at TCU, but now he goes over to Ole Miss. So
I mean, he flashed plenty, I think.
He flashed plenty, but in terms of like the go-to who was going to be there and take TCU to new heights, there was just too much uncertainty around him. It couldn't all be on one man's shoulders, let's put it that
way. Well, and I think it was also a personality thing.
Personality.
It might not have fully fit.
There's nuance to that conversation, but
for sure.
Alas, both Dart and Evans now end up at Ole Miss. And you know, it is not a slam dunk that these guys are just going to go out there and start producing. It's a different system. I think there's a lot of reason for optimism that it will work. But one question that needs to be answered is, are these just big names on the move to the same place? Or are these big names who are actually going to get there and produce and look comfortable in a system and be worth all the hype? This is a conversation that we have to have more of as it relates to transfers. You hear big names on the move. The assumption is that, and I'm just going to throw out Spencer Rattler. I think Spencer Rattler will be great at South Carolina. I'm not saying otherwise, but it isn't something that you can always assume that they're going to go to this new place and suddenly they're going to produce at the same level or an even better level. Situations change. Coaching staffs are different. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I'm the Dart and Evans situation at Ole Miss is really interesting to me. I think it will work out handsomely. I'm very excited to see what Lane Kiffin can do, but I don't know if we're at a point where we can assume as much as a sure thing.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's not a full-on savior situation like I think Spencer Rattler is being viewed at South Carolina. I mean, I think it's just going to be a no-brainer success, Jackson Dart at Ole Miss, given Lane Kiffin's track record, given what we just see in the sport. If you want to succeed, the first thing you have to do is leave USC. When you look at Lane Kiffin, Steve Sarkisian, we'll see with Keaton Slovis
at Pitt. Yep.
Didn't work out with Max Brown making that move, but that's okay. But Jackson Dart, Ed Orgeron, it's just, now it didn't work out long term for Ed Orgeron, but he did win a national championship. So that's the move. I mean, you go back to, what was the Jarvis Jones? Yeah. I think couldn't get medically cleared at USC and shines at Georgia. Like, first thing you got to do.
Get out of USC.
Get out of SC and get that out of your system and then you go succeed.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. We'll see.
No, I think it's a no-brainer.
Yeah. I would assume as much, but I do think with more guys on the move, we're going to see situations where it doesn't work out. I don't think this will be one of them, but I think it's fair to ask the question. The other thing I'll throw out there, you know, kind of on the topic of transfers and maybe not working out, but we did touch on LSU briefly before, but Jaden Daniels, right? Big time prospect, big time transfer news here in the last couple of weeks. Jaden Daniels announces that he's going to LSU. That's a crowded quarterback room. Mm-hmm. It's a crowded quarterback room. Miles Brennan's still there. Garrett Nussmeier's still there. I don't know if he factors in at all. Walker Howard, big time recruit that Brian Kelly was able to lock down when he came on campus. So that's like four guys if you include Jaden Daniels. And I'm probably going to annoy people by saying this. I'm going to say it all summer. I'll probably end up saying it all fall too. But Brian Kelly in these situations, it's always a good problem to have when you have a bunch of qualified quarterbacks. It's always a good problem to have. You want that. Brian Kelly is not good in these situations. He is not good in these situations until he accidentally falls into a guy. And you could say that sort of happened with Ian Book, sort of happened with DeShone Kizer. But really, Book was the only stable situation. And that's because there weren't any other guys that he could really go to. No one else made sense. So I am interested in getting more information via the springtime about that quarterback situation at LSU. I would assume nothing if I were an LSU fan. I would assume absolutely nothing. Don't assume that it's Jaden Daniels or Miles Brennan or Garrett Nussmeier or even anybody on the roster at this point.
Right.
I just don't think BK is good in these situations. So, yeah, fair. I'd love a little bit more information there. I don't know what we can make of it, even if we get it in the springtime, but just keep your eyes on that situation because that could get really hairy. It's just his MO.
Can I give you some half teams that are desperate for defense and how you think that might be a differing fix-it solution than teams who, on offense, you like, you can say it's scheme, you can say it's quarterback is the immediate fix, right? Because there are so many transfers on the move. For defense, excuse me, these are some of the teams.
Are these the teams that you labeled needs the D?
Yeah. Well, okay. You changed that in the document, but yeah, whatever that means.
I didn't put that in there.
So Ohio State, we know the change. We know the hiring of Jim Knowles. We know that the defense and the scheme was just not going to work out under Kerry Coombs. And we knew that in 2020, but it was really taken advantage of by teams like Oregon, Michigan, during the 2021 season, culminating in a Utah shootout. And Utah's a very good team that really gashed Ohio State. So we know Ohio State. Western Kentucky, that was, I think, more of a product of having just an incredible offense that scored quickly and left the defense on the field a lot. Wake Forest, kind of a similar situation. They just didn't have the manpower on defense. UCLA seemed like it was going to be a really promising season after that LSU game, but they got gashed all the time over the course of that season. They make a change at defensive coordinator. Jerry Azzanaro's in. Now I don't have his name in front of me. It's an NFL guy that Chip Kelly brought in to take over the defense. And they lose a bunch on defense to transfer. UCLA does. Oklahoma, we know all about, the change there. You bring in Ted Roof, you get yourself a defense.
You get a leaky roof, yeah.
Now you bring in Brent Venables and you presume that the defense is going to improve, that there is going to be a very specific, more successful vision. Oregon, another one of those teams that really did struggle on defense, especially the end of the year. You look at those Utah games getting pushed around the way that they were did, not necessarily up front, but just Utah eventually kind of did whatever they wanted to do against this Oregon team. Texas, I don't know how much I need to talk about the Texas defense. This is a family show. Oregon State looked to be incredibly inventive and efficient on offense. The defense was nowhere near holding up its end of the bargain. North Carolina took a huge step back. Virginia was a nightmare. Texas Tech obviously makes the coaching change, so we'll see what happens there.
Yeah.
To you, though, how does a defense go from 123rd in the nation, 109th in the nation, 97th in the nation, to 53rd, 46th, something like that?
Well, first off, it's talent. Secondly, it's coaching. And thirdly, in the case of someone like a Texas, it's fundamentals.
Sure.
It's fundamentals. Texas has not been good at these fundamentals now for 5 years running. They missed too many tackles in the open field. Defense, more than anything, is an effort play. You've got to get somebody out there who can motivate the troops. You've obviously got to get the talent if you're playing at a Power 5 level that can compete. But, only so much of it is scheme. I think oftentimes we factor in scheme, but there's so much more that goes into it that I think Texas is a really good example of it. Coach Quitt's a pretty good coach. People like Coach Kukowski.
Yeah.
But you got to tackle. You got to execute when you're out there. And so I think that's a big part of it, frankly, finding a way to motivate the troops.
The 2020 Texas defense was actually pretty good. Otherwise, it's been average lately. But really, Texas is one of those schools because, as you mentioned, it's a talent thing. It's a mentality thing. It's an effort thing. And that's why I think you're going to see a lot more programs who are not recruiting on the huge level really mine the depths of other schools, the portal, G5, FCS, whatever. Because if you can target, any good offense can say, that middle linebacker is nowhere near good enough to be playing for that team. That edge guy we're just going to run at because he is a total liability against the run. Like, it is so easy to spot these guys and spot them quickly, especially if they're second, third, whatever, walk on, whatever string they are, that I think that's where you're going to see a number of smart teams that need dramatic defensive help hit the portal for depth, for guys who are clearly playing with a certain mentality it takes to succeed. Because you see these programs and like, okay, the defensive tackle 6'3", 335. And then he just gets blown off the ball. You're like, well, it's not good enough, right? He's not playing with that right mentality. He's not playing with the effort. He's not good enough. And so you can make the changes with the same guys on offense. To me, maybe not with offensive line, but with scheme, with running backs, with receivers, with tight ends, even with quarterbacks playing in systems that need to be overhauled. You can fix that with the same guys. You don't see it a lot on defense. You don't see a wholesale dramatic improvement year to year without seniors out, freshmen in, guys, you know, they were down seven guys to season-ending injuries. They're back and they're solidifying things, or a team hitting the portal to say, okay, now we have three good outside linebackers. Now we have two decent safeties. Now we have two competent defensive tackles, and we didn't last year. That's where I think that just the overhauling of the depth chart makes a lot more of a difference.
All righty. I have a number of other questions here that I jotted down. I don't think we have time to go into all of these, but certainly we welcome any feedback we can get from the Verballerhood.
Sure.
SolidVerbal@gmail.com, as always. We will post a clip of this episode out on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheSolidVerbal. Please feel free to comment down below. Let us know what your questions are as we head into springtime. Also over at verballers.com. Look, we've talked about it time and again. This really isn't intended as a sales pitch, more of just like an important bulletin for passionate Verballers that I know are out there. The Discord server has been popping off here, even in the off season.
Sure, totally.
Even in the off season, we've got people talking college football, anything new that pops up. I've been using our own Discord as a news source for myself because I can't stay on top of all these things. You can't either. There's just too much going on.
It's true.
Our people who are out there on Discord, in at verballers.com, they are doing God's work by helping us out, contributing to the show, letting us know what's going on in the college football world. So if nothing more, it's a great way to stay connected to the college football community and other people who like the Solid Verbal. Again, that's at verballers.com. And one other way that you can help out here in the off season. Tell your friends, man. Tell your
friends. That'd be
great. Subscribe to the show. Let's get some new ears here. Help us continue growing this community as we build towards the college football season in 2022. Got some months to go and we're hard at work behind the scenes, but the more the merrier. You know the drill.
Can I ask you one final question involving spring practice and big time college football?
Please.
What classes do we think Stetson Bennett is taking currently? Like, okay, I would say it is likely that Stetson Bennett is pursuing some sort of meaningful graduate degree, right? That he is, like, Stetson Bennett wants to someday be a dentist and is taking classes to pursue that dream, or getting his MBA, or is getting his master's in, I don't know, Cantonese. Who knows? But also, the possibility is there, and I have just obviously done no research on this, that Stetson Bennett is taking the Matt Leinart ballroom dancing tact. This like free year, essentially, after winning the national championship and, you know, lifelong Georgia fan, decides to come back for one last hurrah after summiting the mountain. Is Stetson Bennett, like, is he taking a class about Dr. Mario? Is he studying Papa Shot design? Like, what is he doing with his time in this final session at Georgia? That to me is the dream. That's the like, he is just, I don't know what the easiest classes are. I don't know what the most creative, fun classes are at Georgia. Like, is he doing like bowling three? Is he getting a master's in bowling? I can't wait to learn this answer if it is a good one.
His Wikipedia page currently says that he's 5'9 and a half.
Ooh.
Which I don't believe is accurate unless something happened dramatically in the offseason.
You think he's shorter than 5'9 and a half?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm saying he Wikipedia is not an official source for citation.
Oh, okay. What is his degree in?
I have no idea.
Could you imagine the time that you would have already winning a national championship for Georgia, coming back with like, well, we'll see what happens for S's and G's, and you're just king of the campus,
right?
Former walk-on, great story. and you just sort of coast. You just glide your final hurrah, your last hurrah. It's great. I don't know what I would take. I took a golf class at Oregon.
Did you?
That was fun. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Do we decide we're going to go golfing at some point? Even like a par three course, right? We're going to do that soon.
I would love to. Yeah. I mean, I really want to go to Topgolf because that brings the full tendos with Ty.
Is there a Topgolf near you?
I think within an hour, within 45 minutes. Sure.
Okay. We can make that work.
I'm happy to go to an executive course, go to a local like par three Muni.
Yeah. No, that's
get some season fries. It's great.
I don't need anything fancy.
All right. But yeah. Oh, what? So did you take any just fun fluff class at the Pennsylvania State University?
I accidentally ended up taking the same class three times.
Okay. Tell me about it.
And I got credits for it all three times.
Yeah.
I was in a major that was relatively new and changed the classification of one class several times.
Oh.
There was not really a block in the system, though, that prevented me from taking it multiple times. And because they kept changing the name of it, mm-hmm. each year it sort of presented as a new elective in the major. And okay. so I kept taking it because I liked the instructor, only to find out when I got there that it was the same class.
Grade progressively got worse each time you took it. Yeah.
By the third time around, there was definitely a sidebar discussion between me and the professor, like, yo, do I got to be here for this? Like, so that was
it a computer science class? What was it?
It was, I would say, intro to technology.
Okay.
So it was very much a 100 level class that kept getting reclassified.
Yeah.
That worked out well for me. I was pleased with that scenario.
Yeah.
That was good. I did have some other fluff classes that I took along the way, but that's probably the most notable. How about you?
No, it was just the golf one. The golf one was the big one. My path at Oregon was not terrible. After like taking the econ classes early on, ooh, was I bad in econ? Micro, macro, you name it, was I bad. But as soon as I started taking all the journalism classes, you know, both before getting into the J school and then in the J school, that was a great time. Golf, did I take anything else that was fluffy? No, just went over to a golf course and one day we'd be like, here's how you chip, have fun.
Yeah.
Here's how you putt. Go for it.
I took a fitness walking class.
Oh, nice. How'd you do?
I mean, I think it was pretty much pass fail, but that was easy.
Do you know that one of the preeminent authors in that space, fitness walking, his name is Dan Rubenstein, and I get tweets intended for him all the time.
Why don't we leave it at that?
That's it.
Can we bring him on as an off-topic show?
That would be so great. Like, honestly, if all the Ty Hildenbrandts out there, if all the Dan Rubensteins out there, a proponent of walking to improve your fitness and physical and mental health, it's kind of as like great as it gets to me. Like, I don't see this guy going down any sort of terrible path that I'm confused for this, you know, horrible, horrible person. Like, that's a great, great name sharer guy. It's great.
I mean, if you want to DM him, we can bring him on our Verballers Only off-topic show one of these days.
Yeah.
All right. Well, folks, thank you so much for downloading, for listening, for playing along at home. You know where to find us. Leave your spring questions with us. Perhaps we'll address them on one of our upcoming Brew and A or Q&A episodes. In the meantime, we've got a lot of planning to do before we get to March the 17th, this Thursday. We've got a thematic show that we're very excited about. We've got guests. We've got we put way more research into this than you would have expected. So we are thrilled. We've got work that we need to do before Thursday rolls around. But in the meantime, always and forever, stay solid.
Peace.